50 years after the Second Vatican Council discussed the best ways for Catholics to worship, they're still debating the ideal form of liturgy. Should it be the timeless beauty of choral music or the high-energy Christian rock, Hillsong church style? Producer Noel Debien recently attended a conference of 600 Catholics to reflect on worship. Have they lost some of their heritage or been renewed by the guitars and the amplifiers? After singing the evening prayers, Noel sat down with Dr. Claire Johnson, a lecturer at the Australian Catholic University.
Sacrosanctum Concilium, or the Constitution on the Sacred Liturgy, is kind of a mission statement, if you like, on both the reform of the liturgy, how it was going to be reformed, and its general principles of the liturgy. What is it that we think we're doing when we gather together on a Sunday morning? Why do we do it? What is God doing in this? What are we doing in this? How is it to be done well? What sorts of principles are we to uphold when we reform this liturgy, which is what the council was calling for? And what is that reform going to look like? Probably the most utilised paragraph is paragraph 14, the importance of enabling the full, conscious and active participation of the people in the rites, because they're baptised and they have a right to participate in the liturgy. Now, this was new, this really strong emphasis on calling for the congregation to participate, not simply to sit there as spectators to the priest's work of offering the Mass. Now they are going to be celebrants as well. They are celebrating the liturgy as well, and they are called upon to take their active part.
50 years after Sacrosanctum Concilium, we're still talking about it. Why do you think that is?
Because we haven't yet received it fully, in my opinion. We still are unpacking its riches. Now, this was a document that was debated on for about a year among the Council Fathers, and prior to that it had undergone a lot of versions before we actually got to that point. And as the first constitution that the Council promulgated, it had a lot riding on it. And I think because the liturgy is at the heart of what the Church is about, it's the high point of our contact with God in the world. It matters so very much to us. We are ideally doing it every week, and we are ideally learning something new every week about ourselves, about our relationship with God, about our relationship with each other and the world. The liturgy is the nexus point where all of those things come together. And so a document trying to articulate that still needs to be unpacked 50 years later.
The Apostolic Nuncio mentioned in his welcome speech that he remembers his seminary days where there were factions, progressive modern people who liked, you know, contemporary music, traditional people who preferred chant and Latin and that sort of stuff. He remembered that division. I remember that division. That division, I think, still exists. It's even here in this conference.
Yes, I would agree. We do have representatives from a lot of different perspectives on styles of sacred music and role of sacred music in liturgy. And what I was trying to do in the talk that I gave this morning was have a little something to say to each of them, but really ground what I was saying in the Church's own teaching on sacred music. We all need to be reminded and kind of recentered a little bit. So if our preference is Gregorian chant, it's good for us to understand that Vatican II permitted all kinds of different music to be utilised. If our preference is for, you know, Hillsong kind of music, it's very good for us to hear that Vatican II gave incredible priority to Gregorian chant. Ideally, we're going to see in parishes a representation of all of the different styles of music. We don't need to be just a Hillsong-style parish or a cathedral Gregorian chant-type parish. Ideally, our repertoire should be quite broad.
For the sake of argument, the conservative side of the culture wars, the liturgy culture wars, say that, look, what Vatican II brought was rack and ruin, choirs collapsed, good music disappeared, we got rubbish through the 70s and 80s. You hear them say it, and they still say it, and I can remember being a child and seeing some of this stuff they talk about. Are we in a stage of reanalyzing how far it went, as it were, where it all went to a contemporary music, which was a much simpler music? Are we at a stage where there is a rethink going on 50 years on?
I hope so. I think the value of a choir, both for a parish and for the choristers, is enormous. I run a choir at Australian Catholic University, and it is such a gift to the community there and to the broader community. The choir possibly disappeared in some parishes because culture shifted. I'm not sure that we can lay it all at the feet of the Second Vatican Council and its reforms, because if you read the documents, they're not in any way saying that choirs should be anything other than diligently promoted. So it's good for us 50 years later to read that and go, well, okay, if that's what the Council Fathers wanted, are we remiss somehow in allowing choirs to disappear? And I think we're looking at a question of musical literacy across culture as well, that in many ways music plays a very different role in people's lives now that we have instant access to it all the time, beautiful quality recordings of other people doing this for us that perhaps we don't feel like we need to do it ourselves. And I think one of the big challenges the church faces in terms of trying to get people involved in singing in the liturgy or singing the liturgy itself is simply enabling them to reclaim their voice. In some ways, if we remind people that singing is expected, and if we expect it of them and give them lots of support and help in terms of bringing music into their lives and into their worship, we have a whole new lease of life.
Why is it that there is so much concern given to music as such and the participation of people in this music?
The liturgy is actually designed to be sung. And this is one of the things that I think was forgotten as people were receiving the various waves of reform that came after the council. When we were transitioning from Latin into English, or the Dialogue Mass, if you were one of the parishes that had the opportunity to participate in the Dialogue Mass.
This was the Mass where the priest allowed and enabled the people to recite some of the Mass back to them instead of just listening.
That's right. But the recitation was in Latin. So this was probably the first step toward getting people to participate in the liturgy, but they weren't singing it back, they were speaking it back. So that might be a point at which we start to get this breakdown in the understanding that the liturgy is actually designed to be sung. The latest version of the Roman Missal that we have, the third typical edition following the Council, has all of the prayers in their sung form listed first in the Missal, and then the spoken version after that. Now, that sends a very strong message that the designers, I suppose, or those who have retranslated this Missal, made a conscious decision to place music as a priority. So music and singing the liturgy itself, singing the prayers of the liturgy, the dialogues, the Lord be with you and with your spirit, those sorts of things. It's about the people's participation through song, and the church has given a priority to that.
Noel Debien speaking there with Claire Johnson from the Australian Catholic University.